The Undercover Economist. Exposing why the rich are rich, the poor are poor, and why you can never buy a decent used car. Author, Tim Hartford. The coffee in your cappuccino costs pennies. Of course, that's not the whole story. There's milk, electricity, cost of the paper cups, and wages for waiters to smile at the customers all day long. But after you add all that up, you still get something a lot less than the price of a cup of coffee. According to economics professor Brian McManus, markups on coffee are around 150%. For example, it costs 40 cents to make a $1 cup of coffee, so somebody's making a lot of money. Who? You might think that the obvious candidate is Howard Schultz, the owner of Starbucks. But the answer isn't as simple as that. The main reason that Starbucks can ask $2.55 for a cappuccino is that there is not a shop just next door charging $2. You may ask, so why is nobody next door undercutting Starbucks? The truth is that Starbucks' most significant advantage is its location, just on the desire line of thousands of commuters. The nice margin that Starbucks makes on their cappuccinos is due neither to the quality of the coffee nor the staff. It's location, location, location. Strength from scarcity. Imagine a wild frontier with new farmers, but plenty of fertile land available. One day a farmer, Alex, walks into town and offers to pay rent for an acre of fertile land. But because there's no shortage of land, competing landlords will not be able to charge a high rent. The lesson here is that the bargaining strength comes through scarcity. As long as farmers are scarce and lands are plentiful, then landlords would have no bargaining power. If over the years many immigrants follow in Alex's footsteps, the amount of spare land will shrink until there's none left. And then, rents can go up. How much? By how much will landowners be able to raise rents? It will have to equal the difference in the productiveness of high-rent fertile lands and inferior-rent free lands. If the difference in productiveness of the two types of land is 5 bushels of grain a year, then the rent will also be 5 bushels a year. The power of the marginal. Economists call the other rent-free land marginal land because it's at the margin between being cultivated and not being cultivated. In the beginning, when land was more plentiful than farmers, it was not only the best fertile land, it was also the marginal land, because new farmers could use it. Because the best land was the same as the marginal land, there was no rent. Later, when there were so many farmers and there was not enough fertile land, inferior land became the marginal land, and rents on the fertile land rose 5 bushels a year. The difference in productivity between the land and the marginal land. From lands to coffee kiosks. Why is coffee expensive in London, New York, Washington, or Tokyo? It's because the coffee kiosks have to pay high rent. Kiosks, like lands, command high rents only if the grain they help produce is more valuable than other marginal kiosks. Just as land will command high rents if the grain they produce is valuable, prime coffee bar locations will command high rents only if customers will pay high prices for coffee. Rush hour customers are so desperate for caffeine and in such a hurry that they're practically price blind. Why some things are expensive. There's another way to drive rent on lands up, and it's not natural, as the last one we explained before. Let's say landlords get together and manage to persuade the local sheriff that there should be what in England they call a green belt, a broad area of land around the city on which farming is strongly discouraged by tough regulations. The landlords claim that it would be a shame to cover beautiful wild land with farms, and so farming on the land should be made illegal. The landlords stand to benefit hugely from such a ban, because it would drive up the rents on all legal land. So we found two reasons why rents might be high. One, it's worth paying a lot for fertile land, because the grain that land produces is so valuable. Two, it's worth paying a lot for legal land, because there's no alternative. Are you being ripped off? One of the problems with being an undercover economist is that you start to see green belts of one kind or another all over the universe. How can we tell the difference between things that are expensive because they are naturally scarce, or things that are expensive because of artificial means? For example, legislation, regulation, or foul play. If I, as an undercover economist, want to know whether I'm being ripped off by supermarkets, banks, or drug companies, I can find out how profitable those industries are. If they're making high profits, then initially I'm suspicious. But if it seems that it's fairly easy to set up a new company and compete, I become less suspicious. It means that the high profits are caused by natural scarcity. Inside information. There's a simple rule that every undercover economist knows. If one party to a deal has inside information and the other does not, then markets are not efficient, but biased. It wasn't until an American economist named George Akerlof published a revolutionary paper in 1970 that the profession realized quite how profound and dramatic the problem might be. Akerlof chose as his example the market for used cars and showed that even if the market is highly competitive, it simply cannot work if sellers know a lot about the quality of their cars, much more than buyers do. Why you cannot buy a decent used car. To take a stark example, let's say that half the used cars on sale are peaches and half are lemons. The peaches are worth more to prospective buyers than to sellers. The lemons are worthless pieces of junk. Sellers know whether the car they are selling is a lemon or a peach. Buyers don't. They just have to guess. A buyer who doesn't mind taking a fair gamble might think that anything between $2,000 and $2,500 would be a reasonable price for a car that has a 50% chance of being a peach and a 50% chance of being a lemon. The seller would also think this was a fair deal for a 50-50 prospect, but the seller does not face a 50-50 prospect. The seller knows for certain whether the car is a peach or a lemon. The problem is that a seller with a lemon would bite your hand off if offered $2,500. But a seller with a peach would find it rather insulting. Wandering around offering $2,500 for a car, you quickly discover that only lemons are for sale at that price. Of course, if you offered $4,001, you would also see the peaches on the market, but the lemons will not go away. And $4,001 is not an attractive price for a car that only has a 50% chance of running properly. Inefficient markets. No seller is willing to sell a peach for less than $4,000. But no buyer is willing to offer that much on a car that has a 50% chance of being a lemon. Sellers don't offer peaches for sale. Buyers know that they won't. And in the end, the only cars that are traded are worthless lemons. The conclusion is, if some people know more than others about the quality of a product, then some high-quality products may not be traded at all.